Unpolished Little Gems, Episode 11, Shadows. A musician reveals the dark secret behind his rock band's unusual name. Mole Bats stars Sam McGregor and was written and produced by Tasman Pinder.
We were 18 when we got the band together. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Phil was 17 still. That's right. Anyway, we met at this place we used to go to in Newport. A bit of a dive, really. It's called the Jailhouse. We'd go in there to chill, smoke some weed, listen to tunes. That's where I met Phil, originally. I remember seeing you that first night at the jailhouse. You were puking on the floor and your mate had to drag you out, literally. Did you remember that? And he was pulling you across the floor and this hand suddenly reaches up onto my table. Your hand shoots up and swipes my shot of tequila. It was like, you know that scene in Carrie when, you know, when like the zombie hand suddenly thrusts out from her grave and scares the living shite out of Sue Snell? Cheeky bastard. I remember looking at you, and you were a complete wreckhead in those days. No, come on, no, you were. Well, anyway, he was. Just because now he's like, you know, Mr. Detox or whatever. But back then, he was the right sort. And you were wearing this Black Flag t-shirt, shaved head, silver crossed earring like Georgie Michael in his warm years. I was like, yes, mate, I need to have this man in my life. And I said to Johnny, Johnny, do you remember this, John? He knows what I'm going to say. So anyway, I leaned over to Johnny and I tell him, that's our new singer right there. Didn't I say that, John? Yeah, I just knew it as soon as I saw you. And 8 years on, here we are, still together. That's longer than most marriages last. Well, longer than my marriage lasted. Mole Bat. Well, it's a long story, really. God, this again. You really want me to talk about the name? I mean, does it really matter? Like, is it really such an endless source of fascination? Yeah, people always ask, like, yeah. You really does want to know. Like, I get it. It's just... Oh, fine. No. Like, I'm not being naggy with you. Like, don't get us wrong. Like, it's fine. Like, I'm fine to talk about it. It's just not that great a story. Though, like, and I wouldn't want to disappoint. Because, you know, people have paid good money to read your magazine for an interview with us. And well, to be honest, like, I've got better stories. Better stories than that. Much better. Like, I could tell you about this weekend in Leeds with the drummer from Iron Maiden. Yeah, when we got completely, like, properly mashed up and fine, the name. Okay, well, you asked, so if you're disappointed, don't blame me. Can't say I didn't warn you. So, we wanted something that was kind of, like, dark. And I started thinking, what animals are nocturnal? You know, like, kind of like us. Badgers, owls, that sort of thing. And then we came up with the idea of the bat because of the association with death and darkness, vampires and stuff. At the time, we were creating a lot of music which was inspired by heavy metal like Sabbath, Iron Maiden, you know, Metallica, when they were thrash and not doing rubbish commercial dirge. You know, like, Master of Puppets era and that. So anyway, like, these bands all had, like, a lot of bats on the covers of their albums, and that was where it came from. As for the mole thing, I'm not too sure of that. Maybe it was because John's pretty blind. No, sorry, mate, but it's true. Oh, remember you used to have those round glasses with thick lenses like a magnifying glass? he thought you was Elvis Costello or something. Yeah, I mean, I guess. Again, people do say blind as a bat, not blind as a mole. A good point. Moles are much cuddier though, aren't they? Like, sort of like something you'd like to stroke and curl up with on a cold winter's night. John likes to curl up with his hairy mole. Grim hair. Not anyway. Yeah, we thought having the two words together, bat and mole, would kind of reflect our softer side as well as the nastier edginess. See, that's where, like, well, what our, you know, music is all about. It's a balance. You're going to take the rough with the smooth. You don't believe it? You don't believe me? Well, what exactly is it about the story that's so unlikely? It makes perfect sense, that story. And that's what I tell the Kerrang journalist as we're sat in Rick's bar, me, drinking a whiskey on the rocks and show you a Bacardi Breezer. A blonde, 21-year-old, with purple streaks in her hair and a nose ring. Never seen a girl look so disappointed. And believe you me, I've seen some disappointed women in my time. Oh, yes. People always ask that question about the name, and we always find some way to dodge it, like talk around it, deflect it. You see, we'd never tell anyone about the truth and what we'd seen that night after we'd been to the jailhouse. Like, the night we met Phil for the first time. We made a pact not to talk about it. Like, it's our business, you see. Private. Yeah, but seeing as it's you, like, I can tell you're not just going to let it up on it, are you? I mean, you really want to know. Okay? Well, no, I'm going to tell you. I'll tell you. The thing was, and this was the thing, the second I saw Phil for the... I felt this instant, like, it was like an electric shock. It was weird. Like, I just knew he was kind of the missing link for the band. So, after he's been sick on the floor, and the bouncer had thrown him out the jailhouse, and his mates pulling him out of the door, and me and Johnny were followed them. And this dude, like, the guy, Phil's with, oh, man, like, he was, like, 6'5". Must have been about 300 pounds. Like, I mean, seriously huge. A brick shithouse. Yeah, we're talking Hulk Hogan crossed with The Rock. And so we're just following him down the street, and they head out in the alleyway, and this beast of a man turns round, and yeah, I guess he thinks we're pissed off about Phil taking my drink, or the fact he'd been sick all our Johnny's new DCs. and anyway, he spins round, and, like, terrifying. Like, he's all aggy. And we're, like, backing off. I mean, I wouldn't usually back out of a fight. I can hold my own, but, like, this guy is, like, huge. So I tell him about the band. And, yeah, you know, we just want to talk to Phil. Like, we didn't want any trouble. Like, the drink's not an issue. And you know, John can put his shoes through the washing machine. Yeah, we just want to give Phil our number. Yeah, for the sake of the band. But this big dude, like, he has some serious issues. Yeah, primarily with me. And then, like, he starts coming towards me, and I can see he's totally out of it. Like, he's got the red mist. Well, I'm just thinking I'm screwed. Like, he's going to kick the shit out of me. My life is going to end right there. In that urine stinking alley. I see a bottle of Budweiser on the floor. I grab it, I smash it against the wall. And, you know, as I'm waving it at this huge dude, I look over at Johnny, and I see his face under the streetlight. He's terrified. Like, ashen. But Johnny, he's not looking at me. And he's not looking at Hulk Hogan, yeah, who's about to dismember my pathetic little body. No, you see, Johnny's looking at Phil. This whole time, Phil had been slumped against the wall, shaking and puking his guts up. But now something else was happening too, like some kind of transformation. I dropped the broken bottle on the floor as I watched the skin on Phil's arms stretch out, his face contorted in agony, his flesh bursting out through the sleeves of his t-shirt, welding itself into two triangular shapes, stretching from his arms to the sides of his chest. Chunks of, like, bloodied bare red flesh, like, quickly turns red, purple, and then black, like the wings of a bat. I stare in horror as he screams, but no sound comes out. Just a high pitch squeal, and his mouth wide open. The sky around him was marbled blue like a Munch painting. And the huge dude quickly turns over to Phil, and he puts his coat around him. He tries to stop us from seeing what's happening. And Johnny, well, he was freaked. He starts fitting. And Phil, or whatever he'd become, turned black. And then we saw, well, I saw his face. It was not like a human face. Dark fur covered his whole skin, and his nose was puckered up and distorted into some kind of pink, wet snout.
and his eyes were tiny, beady, shiny, black, blind eyes, like a mole, like a bat. That was the first time we found out about Phil's condition. The huge dude, that was his brother. As it turns out, he's like a kind of big deal in the amateur bodybuilding competitions. I deny that. He's not a danger to other people, but they don't understand it, you see. And especially around here, yeah, people can be cruel when they don't understand things. They're small-minded, see. So that's why we have to take him to that dark place and, you know, to keep him safe and so he doesn't hurt himself. We took him to the old power station across from the Sainsbury's car park and in the cellar of an abandoned house. And that's where we take him every time it happens. The transformation. And we just have to restrain him with chains wrapped around his body and which hooked to the wall, so that he doesn't fly away and hurt himself, or so that people can't find him and get to him. And then when the sun comes up, we'll go fetch him from that place. And we'll untie him and he comes to my place at John's. He has a shower and changes into fresh clothes and then we'll hoodoo band practice. So you see, now you know the truth about the name. Is it more believable? Are you happy now?
In Missing, a woman looking for her missing cat has a chance encounter with a young woman who offers to help. Missing stars Claire Amyas and was written and produced by Tracy Haywood.
The flies have been up for 2 weeks now. Missing, Buddy the Cat, a great friend. Please call if you have any information regarding his whereabouts. I went to the internet cafe down the road and got 100 A4 flyers printed. Would you mind putting one up in your window? I asked the man who worked there. Not a problem. We've got little Jack Russell. He's running off all the time. Whenever he does, the kids are distraught, he said. Part of the family, aren't they? I replied. Indeed they are. Good luck. Then, at 6 p.m, I stood at the end of the station platform where everyone taps out their little cards. Bleep, bleep, bleep. The 1810 came thundering in. All of the doors opened and swarms of people in their suits and trainers poured out. They didn't see me at first. So, I held out my flyers and I bellowed as best I could. Missing cat. The first few slipped past and didn't react. Then a woman didn't make eye contact, but she reached out her hand for the flyers and walked on. That seemed to start a chain reaction, and more people reached out their hands to grab the flyer. One woman took it and she stopped. "Oh, I'm so sorry," she said. "I hope you find him soon." And I said, "Thank you very much," and she walked on. Then a few more people took a leaflet. "Awful, isn't it?" said this young woman. She stopped and stood to the side next to me to let people pass by. "I've seen it on the local Facebook group. There's an underbelly of crime round here." "Is there?" I asked. "Yeah. You see it there all the time. Missing cats, dogs, rabbits." "Really?" "Yeah," she said. "What you need to do is make him too hot to handle." "What's that?" I asked. "It's when people share the shit." "I'm sorry about my language," she said. I didn't mind. "It's when people share posts about stolen stuff all over social media and then the thieves know they can't sell it." "How do I do this then? Make him too hot to handle?" I asked. She wanted to know if I had Facebook. I didn't. I said, I have a smartphone, but I'm not really smart enough to use it. And we laughed. Can you do email? She asked. And I told her I did. And she said if I emailed her the details, she would make Buddy too hot to handle for me on social media. She told me her name, which was Jane, and wrote down her email address on one of the flyers and told me to email her, which I did with a photo of Buddy and the details. Missing since Thursday, 17th of September, AM. Tabby cat with a white face, round. From the Moorfields area. A nervous cat, 6 years old. Then, half an hour or so later, I got an email from Jane, and she said she had shared the information on 5 local groups so far, and they had already had about 12 shares. Then, every few days or so, she would email me. It's got 100 shares now. It's got 240 shares. Polly Pocket, an influencer with 1,000 followers, had shared it. I didn't know what this all meant, but I was grateful for the effort. Then, on Friday, after handing out posters at the station, I happened to walk past the local pub, the Plume and Feathers, and I heard this voice. Hiya! Hello! It took me a few seconds to realise I was being waved at. And it was Jane. She was standing outside the pub with 3 of her friends smoking cigarettes. She introduced me to her friends as the lady with the missing cat. And they all told me how sorry they are. Any new leads? She asks. Nothing yet. It's awful, isn't it, the amount of crime you get round here, stealing, robbing. It's not safe to walk the streets anymore. You should be on the local Facebook groups. What are you up to this evening? Oh, nothing, I said. Just sat at home waiting for the phone to ring as usual. Oh, but it's Friday night, she said. Come have a quick drink with us. Are you sure? I asked. You must have better things to do. No, nothing to do other than hang out here, she said. So, I took her up on her offer. I hadn't been to the pub for a long, long time, so when they asked me what I wanted to order, I wasn't really sure. I just glanced up at the menu on the chalkboard and said, I'll have a rum and coke, please. I've no idea why. Which one? She asked. Whatever they've got, I said, which sounded like the right thing to say, and judging by her reaction, it was. She came back from the bar and said, I forgot to ask, so I got you a double. I figured you could use it. I thanked her, and I got my purse out to pay her back for it, and she said, oh, now it's on me, which I wasn't entirely comfortable with, but she was quite insistent. Anyway, I drank the drink, and we chatted about the local area, their college, and about the pubs they go to. They like the Plume and Feathers because it's been serving them since they were 16, and they like to stay loyal to it. I finished my drink and started to make a move, but Jane said, no, stay, it's nice having you here, which I was happy to do, actually. So Jane got me a drink, another rum and coke. We all chatted for a while, then Jane's phone buzzes and she stares at the screen for a few seconds. Then she announces, someone thinks they've seen Buddy over in Longcroft under the railway bridge. Come on, girls, drink up. Let's go check this out. I said, it's fine. I'm happy to go by myself. But she said she'd like to help. Besides, you don't know who's out on these streets at night, do you? I know the local area quite well, but I wasn't familiar with Longcroft, so I was glad to have them with me. Longcroft is about a 30-minute walk away, so it's getting on when we finally get there. At the end of this quiet residential road is the railway bridge. We all approached the entrance of it, and I was quite surprised as they didn't have any lights on the roof or the ceiling of it, whatever it's called. And so you could only see a few feet in front of you. The other girls all got their smartphones out, which had torches on. Mine doesn't have a torch. Not that I know of, anyway. So I just stepped forward as slowly as I could, trying to wait for my eyes to adjust to the darkness. Buddy! The girls call, and I join in. Buddy! We all call. And we wander further and further down into the tunnel. Let's go right to the end, Jane said, so we know we've checked it all. So we keep on walking, all calling, Buddy, Buddy, into the darkness, and there's no response. Two of the girls were giggling at the back, which I supposed was just because they were nervous. The torch lights seemed to make it harder to adjust to the darkness. The flashing light, and then the dark. Then suddenly I felt someone grab my wrist. It was Jane. She turned me round to face her and she said, I don't think there's anything here. Shall we head back and get some chips on the way home? And we did. The girls suggested I had chips and curry sauce like them, which was quite good actually. I got in late that night, but it was nice to be out with Jane and her friends. I think I'm going to have to drop the whole missing cat thing now. Jane suggested her and her friends go out again if there's any more sightings on Facebook. I'll have to tell her I've found him so I don't have to worry about them being out at night. I didn't want anyone to get hurt. I'm just not very good at starting conversations with people. Everyone else seems to find it so much easier than I do. Anyway, I've got an appointment this afternoon with Battersea. They've got a cat called Stephanie, who matches the description I made up for Buddy quite closely, apart from, you know. But I don't suppose she'll mind being called Buddy when she's been waiting for a home now for 4 months. And I'll take the posters down now. It was nice, though, having someone to talk to for a while.
Ta-da!